Well, good afternoon. I'm at the end, and I'm sure everybody's filled with different perceptions. So I think my comments will be of a rather different order. I intend to take seriously this question of, is there life after the EU? I can imagine the absence of the EU, and I will try to do so. But I'm not going to do this in terms of Hungary and Hungarians, but for Europe as a whole and for Europeans in general. I come occasionally to Hungary, but I cannot pretend to understand the bizarre features of Hungarian politics, so please don't expect me to say anything about this. There's one thing I think we all agree upon, is that the European Union is in a serious crisis. There's nothing new about this. The European Union has been in crisis many times, and in fact, it's crisis which has actually driven the process of integration. So under previous circumstances, the general pattern is that European countries get into crisis, they disagree with each other, they spend an inordinate amount of time talking to each other, and eventually they come up with some kind of compromise, which usually, or almost in every case, actually increases, widens the role of the European Union and increases the authority of community institutions, if not the Commission, at least a range of institutions. So crisis has been driving the EU. The question is this a good crisis or a bad crisis? So not all crises are good, I think we would all agree. And so far, for the European Union, in the limited spheres in which it has been operating, has been able to exploit crises. The question is, can it do the same with this crisis? And, of course, this crisis is not really about Hungary. We're in Hungary, and everybody here obviously has a primary interest in that. But somebody said, why isn't it didn't the EU pay attention to Hungary earlier? The EU has some things much more important to deal with these days than Hungary. Hungary is a sideshow compared to the real problems at the present moment. So I'm going to start with one remark that I hope we would all agree on. And I don't know if there's time for questions, so I won't probably find out. The European Union is not the same thing as Europe. The European Union could disappear and Europe would still be there. Europe has many other institutions in common, not to mention the Council of Europe, the European Union, the Western European Union, the OSCE, I don't know, there are dozens of them, not to mention also NATO and a few others that aren't exclusively European. And also most European countries are members and committed, presumably, to applying the rules of the World Trade Organization and various other global institutions. So the EU would disappear, and that doesn't mean we would suddenly find ourselves in Europe in a world without rules of anarchy, etc. Secondly, there's reason to believe that Europe finds itself in what one could call a Kantian situation. Kant, in this famous essay of his on perpetual peace, pointed out that if countries, I think he meant adjacent countries, but let's just say European countries, whatever that means, were democratic, or he called them republican, and if they had strong commercial relationships with each other, then the possibility of peaceful resolution of conflicts would be high. So one of those things we think we know is that democracies not only don't go to war with each other, they don't even threaten to go to war with each other. And that is even more the case if these democracies are closely associated with each other in trade, investment, etc. And so the Pax Europea will survive the absence of the EU. That's at least my assumption. So we're not going to see, if the EU disappears, arms race or some kind of mobilizations and threats across borders. This may happen in certain pieces of Europe. The Balkans is obviously the main suspect, but by and large, then we'll still live in a relatively externally secure region of the world. Now, let's for a minute assume that the present crisis cannot be resolved happily. So we say that the present crisis is a bad crisis. And it's a combination, obviously, the Greek, the whole sovereign debt business, Hungary in terms of internal regimes, and several other at the same time. So we're dealing now with a simultaneity of crises, which the EU has, so to speak, on its agenda. The first question is, let's assume then that the EU is going to go away, or at least, if not go away, at least substantially change what it is and who its members are and what their commitment to each other is. Let's just imagine that. The first question, of course, is this going to be a collapse, a complete collapse, or what is called in the jargon a soft landing? Now, in the case of the EU, a soft landing usually means that the EU will, in fact, divide into two or three EUs, right? So you will have perhaps a bloc. Most people talk about the original six plus perhaps Spain plus I don't know who else, so that core, and perhaps the Scandinavian countries, certainly the southern European countries as a different bloc, and well, Italy's kind of astride those two, and then perhaps the new member states in the east as a third bloc, meaning that the EU would nominally continue to exist, but in fact it would cover three different EUs with different obligations, different tasks, different kinds of functional activities of one kind or another. And in fact, as we all know, that's already happened to a degree with the monetary union, with Schengen, and a number of other opt-outs, opt-ins, etc. So the EU has already moved in that direction, but it could do so in a much more dramatic way, so to speak, and really make clear distinctions. Would it do this by defections or expulsions? As Alexander pointed out, the EU is not well equipped to expel members. It can, however, insult members. It can treat them differentially. And that, in the case of Hungary, is probably my biggest worry. It's not that the EU would expel Hungary. It would start to treat Hungary in a discriminatory fashion, like holding back funds here and there, maybe even withdrawing voting rights at certain moments. And the regime in Hungary would use this as an excuse to defect. In other words, it's difficult to separate the idea of expulsion from defection, because I assume that a country which was differentially treated for some issues would in fact prefer or choose to defect. Even more so if a country, and Hungary is certainly on this list, had extremely strong economic reasons to do so, particularly having to do with competitive devaluation, reneging on sovereign debt. I mean, as I have been listening to people at the CEU describing the state of the Hungarian economy and the indebtedness and who is holding it, etc., I mean, this is an extremely fragile situation economically, and therefore the temptation to use that as an excuse, and then, of course, blame the EU for whatever kinds of consequences ensued from that. So I don't think, and I agree with Alexander, that a country like Hungary, or for that matter Greece, is going to be expelled, but they are going to choose to leave and dress it up as if it were an expulsion or as if it were a national inset. Then the second question becomes, if we have defections, who's going to defect and in what order, so to speak? And here we have then, of course, the question of what are the issues involved. As Alexander pointed out, and I certainly agree with him, this problem of populist movements, and particularly populist movements which use anti-EU rhetoric anyway as part of their mobilizing, nationalistic, whatever you want to call it, strategy, this is not even, certainly not limited to Hungary, it's not limited to Eastern Europe, it's also Western Europe. It's a very good chance in the next elections that the Front National is going to be the second most voted party. And the Front National is at least doctrinally committed to leaving. France is leaving the EU. So the question then becomes, are these going to be blocks defined in some regional terms, blocks defined in some kind of economic situation, like the southern European countries, which have a different kind of sovereign debt problem than Hungary and some of the eastern countries. So that's the next question. Is it going to be individual countries? You know, are we talking about a scenario in which Hungary leaves and then maybe somebody else leaves, and, you know, Hungary leaves and doesn't do too badly, it devalues and it, you know, reneges on national debt or whatever it is, and it survives, and, you know, the famous Argentine scenario. I'm not sure how many of you are aware of this, but you will constantly see in these discussions invoked the case of Argentina, which devalued by 50%, reneged on almost its entire national debt, and actually did well. Now, the secret of that is soybeans, believe it or not. Right? So I don't think that Hungary is going to suddenly become a huge world producer of soybeans. I don't know what you can grow here, but I doubt it.
Paprika.
The market is not significant, but the Chinese seem to be willing to consume, or their pigs seem to be willing to consume infinite quantities of soybeans. But anyway, I'm just saying that be careful of those kinds of analogies, because Argentina did do well under these situations, but not for the same reasons that Hungary might do well. So individual defections or defections of blocks, and then reformation, so you would end up with two or three European unions with perhaps a fictitious union at the top, but the effective rulemaking and binding decisions, etc., would in fact be located in subgroups of these. Now the question is, why would you defect? The most obvious answer is indebtedness, and the fact that you need to restructure your currency at some other level. This is certainly the Greek question, but it's the Italian question, it's the Spanish question, it's the Portuguese, just for those, and I think it's actually also a Hungarian question. So that's one, the most obvious answer, that you would have defections, perhaps as a block, to restructure the value of your currency and your national indebtedness. The other one, of course, is that is quite possible, is defections due to the fact that the EU policies don't work. And to a certain extent, that's already happening. There are several policy areas where the EU failing. The most famous is the fishing policy. It has a huge, elaborate, I don't know how many directives on fishing, and everybody knows that everybody's cheating and the fish are disappearing. Right? So there are areas there where the EU is just a simple failure because it does not have the capacity to actually administer and enforce the very decisions that it somehow manages to make. So you could have just simple failures of policies, and people then defect and say, I will take care of my own fish, or maybe even environment, who knows. Another thing that's very interesting to me as an American is the discussion that what is really going to destroy the European Union is what some people have called the Hamiltonian moment. This is for Alexander Hamilton, a famous American author of the U.S. Constitution, Federalist Papers, blah, blah, blah. And what the point there is that an arrangement like the EU goes so far, and then it meets this wall of political integration. Not necessarily a highly centralized, but a federal government with some greater... And that's exactly what the Hamilton Papers, the Federalist Papers, and the eventual the drafting in Philadelphia, etc., was. And somehow the Americans got over that. Well, they went from confederation to federation. And you know how they did it? We don't like to talk about this. The federal government assumed the debts of the 13 states. Right? They bribed them into a federal unit. Now, that's not such a bad idea for the EU. And people have sort of suggested that, without mentioning Hamilton, of course, is that one way you would do is you would assume all of the debts, sovereign debts, and you would issue euro bonds or whatever it is, and that would be a way through this crisis. But you might not be able to get the citizens, especially of Germany, willing to do this. And in the case of the U.S., it barely passed. New York, it was Germany, incidentally. New York was Germany in the American case, and the New Yorkers barely passed the referendum on the new. So, anyway. Now, the final one that we have been discussing here is that the collapse of the EU or its division into different would be driven by polarized, I think Alexander again has put his finger on it, populist movements in a significant number of countries, and that somehow triggering this, maybe Hungary is in the vanguard of this kind of rear guard political movement, and therefore if Hungary somehow defected, and this was electorally advantageous or even did things which somehow pleased the Hungarian public and maybe also resolved some of these economic problems, then there certainly would be a tendency for other European countries to use that as a model or an excuse from also defecting from the EU. And certainly we talk a great deal, those of us who study the EU, about this process of politicization. This is probably the most significant for a political scientist change. The miracle of the EU is that they got away with so much for so long without anybody paying attention to them. So it was a very technocratic thing. It advanced, it affected people's lives, but in ways that nobody was aware of. It did not lead to mobilizations of political parties. Most political parties didn't even take a position other than sort of soft approval, so to speak, acquiescence. And it wasn't a controversial item in elections or between political parties. And now it is, and that's what opens the door, I think, to this kind of potential defections. Finally, one of the things that I invite you to think about is, I think some of you will remember the discussion around the Single European Act. And I don't know who it was, but some smart person came up with the slogan, "What are the costs of non-EU? What are the costs of not having a single integrated market?" Right? And incidentally, they completely overestimated that. So they made promises about how wonderful the EU would be in terms of growth rate, and which didn't materialize. But anyway, economists don't really know how to do this, but they could give you a figure, and people believed it. So what are the costs of not having the EU? I invite you to think about it. I think the most obvious one, we've already seen this to a degree, and therefore it may be simply a projection of what's on, is much greater political uncertainty at the national level. As it is, the existence of the EU has operated to restrict the range of options, the range of differences that are, quote, acceptable and likely to be followed by national publics, etc. It certainly would increase the rate of economic growth, but it's so low anyway that I'm not sure how much it means when you're growing at 1.5 and you go to 1 or 1 whatever. I mean, still, it would be presumably lower. But the most important effect would be differential impact across the member countries. Because certainly if they collapse the EU, you would not get this famous, what are they called, the regional funds, state structural funds, this attempt to somehow encourage the catching up of the less developed with the most developed. Those kind of policies would immediately disappear, and you would have differential growth rates, and you would widen the difference in standard of living and economic development between member countries. You would also, of course, threaten the production of so-called regional public goods. Although there, as I mentioned earlier, many of these regional public goods are part of broader systems of international regulation. But let's say environment, for example. So, yes, there's a whole body of environmental law. Some of that law may be continued to be obeyed. I don't know. Some people would certainly, some countries and certain industries would certainly defect, and you would then have a degradation of environmental standards, but how far that would go, et cetera. The other fancy thing, of course, is fiscal federalism. Certainly, if the European Union declined, you would have this fiscal federalism, meaning that nobody would pay anybody else for anything. So everybody would presumably follow policies that returned the greatest return to. And probably, of course, it would decrease the level of investment, especially cross-investment from other parts of the world within Europe. The European market would, of course, become much less attractive as a unified market and therefore to locate your, and you would presumably encourage it elsewhere. Labor mobility would probably go down. One perhaps desirable effect for some countries is it would make Europe a lot less attractive as a place for extra-European migrants to come to, because it would be economically much less dynamic, and there would probably, of course, be a collapse of the Schengen and other kinds of agreements. So getting into one European country by some miserable, by boat or whatever it is, would not in the future guarantee you that you could go to other European. And of course, most importantly, relative decline of Europe vis-a-vis other regions of the world, which are in the process, in fact, of generating new regional norms, and that, of course, is a problem. So I invite you to think about it. It's not unthinkable that the EU could disappear, unless the EU as we know it now, that it could become something else and look quite different. That's another matter. I don't think it's going to go away, period, but it could transform itself into something which is very different than what we think of today as the EU. And it's not just because of Hungary, incidentally, although I know, but I do agree with Alex Honnold. I mean, we've been focusing on Hungary because it's at this particular moment it's a kind of extreme case, but this kind of populist movement, you know, I've seen it. It's called La Lega in northern Italy, and to a certain extent it even fits Berlusconi. So it's not just new democracies of Eastern Europe. Western European democracies, this is the Front National, I don't know what the program would look, you translate it from French into Hungarian, and I suspect it would look familiar to many people who follow your present government. Anyway, thank you for your attention.